The Lord is with us, family. And tonight, as usual, He's been faithful to bring a beautiful message and teaching about peacemaking and peacemakers. So today is August the 3rd, 2015. The Lord began, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called sons of God." Indeed, peacemakers resemble me. Of all attributes aside from charity, peacemaking is most important to me. Without peace, it is impossible to accomplish anything. Without peace, you cannot foster love. Without peace, men are in a continual downward spiral of death and hopelessness. So this is one of Satan's favorite strategies. Steal your peace at any cost. Deprive you of your peace. That is why I have promised you the peace that passes all understanding. Anytime your peace is being rattled, you can assume there's a snake nearby. No pun intended. Okay, a rattlesnake. Oh, Lord, your sense of humor. When you get rattled, you're dealing with the serpent. Yes, the enemy is taking territory from you, unless you're very observant and nip it in the bud. But for most, it slowly coils around to cut off circulation to the brain, injecting the venom of fear, disguised as prudence. When I visit a soul, I bring peace. Whether you are aware of why you feel peaceful or not, my peace surpasses all understanding and all events. In the midst of tragedy, my peace can descend and bring order out of chaos. The dark forces you speak about, their entire agenda is to foster strife, confusion, and chaos. For I am not a God of confusion, but of peace. 1 Corinthians 14:33. Anytime at all your peace is disturbed or rattled, you can be sure there's a little demon nearby, throwing off your balance, injecting you with its venom. If my people could recognize this from the onset, wars would cease to exist, but rather they try to fight fear with force, and force is always only a temporary solution. That is why my reign is so very important, to restore the Garden of Eden to men, that they may live in peace, goodwill, and understanding. How joyful life will be when I return. Still, you will have dissenters until the serpent is forever banished. But in the beginning, the peace will be a shining force throughout the earth. Even the animals will be at peace with men. And this reminds me, as an aside, of a vision that I had about mosques and about how serpents were being bred in the back of mosques and just crawling out the windows and the doors and the floors, and they would bite people, and people would be infected with hatred. And out of hatred would come violence and war. So, returning to what the Lord is saying here, this peace will be hard won by the blood of many, and will in its nature only be temporary until the final judgment. Then peace shall reign forever. So what I want to say is that peacemakers most resemble me, and the contrast to that is the troublemakers that most resemble Satan. That is why I call the religious leaders a brood of vipers. They pretended peace on the outside, with long flowing garments woven with golden tassels. But inside they were ravening wolves, seeking how to destroy anyone or anything that challenged their authority and rule. Absolute power corrupts, and absolute power was what they were seeking. They threatened men with their eternal salvation if they dared to challenge them. Things have not changed one iota. Fear is still used by religious authorities, masquerading as messengers and protectors of truth. My dear ones, have nothing to do with dissemblers and those who sow discord among brethren. This is most certainly inspired by the wicked ones. I want you to be pure before me, no mud in your hands, rather clean, shining, and ready to be taken into my abode forever. Be peacemakers. Be the one to take up for the absent when cruel things are said. Be the one who puts a stop to gossip and calumny. How beautiful are the footsteps of the bride who brings peace in her bosom. She's adorned with all choice perfumes and jewels from her father's house. Oh, how beautiful you are when you defend righteousness and sow peace among brothers and sisters. You most resemble me when you bring order out of confusion, understanding out of conflict, turning bitterness to forgiveness and kindness. There is no price worthy of such a soul as the one who goes around bringing brotherly love and concord. The fruits of such a one as this will testify to her virtue throughout eternity. I want you to consider for a moment how the wicked venom from the mouth of the serpentine woman can foment wars and disaster after disaster to rulers. 1 and 2 Kings chronicles the lives of Ahab and Jezebel, his wife. Of him it was said, "Surely there was no one like Ahab who sold himself to do evil in the sight of the Lord, because Jezebel, his wife, incited him." Some men need to be spurned on, to be sure, but not to do evil. A godly wife will challenge her husband to listen to God and live for him, and not encourage him to sin. Now it came about after these things that Naboth the Jezreelite had a vineyard, which was in Jezreel, beside the palace of Ahab, king of Samaria. Ahab decided he wanted Naboth's property, so he went to him and said, "Give me your vineyard, that I may have it for a vegetable garden, because it is close beside my house, and I will give you a better vineyard than that in its place, if you like. Or if you like, I will give you the price for it in money." Naboth declined the offer, just as he should have done, for God had forbidden the Jews to sell their paternal inheritance. Naboth was simply obeying the law of the Lord. So Ahab came into his house, sullen and vexed, because of the word which Naboth the Jezreelite had spoken to him. And he lay down on his bed and turned away his face and ate no food. Jezebel found Ahab sulking in his bed and said to him, "How is it that your spirit is so sullen that you're not eating food?" So he explained to her how Naboth refused to let him have his vegetable garden. She replied, "Do you now reign over Israel?" In modern terms, that might sound more like, "Don't you know that you're the king? You can take anything you want." By the way, the commentary in between the story is by Richard Strauss, a pastor that has gone on to be with the Lord. The story continues. "Arise, eat bread, and let your heart be joyful. I will give you the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite." She planned to commit a hideous crime. She was going to pay 2 false witnesses to testify that they heard Naboth blaspheme God and the king, so that both he and his sons would be stoned to death and the king would be free to lay claim to his land. She was going to teach Ahab her philosophy of life, take what you want and destroy anyone who stands in your way. And Ahab did not have the courage to stop her. But the story's not over. These two were self-willed to the end. Elijah met Ahab in Naboth's vineyard and pronounced God's judgment on both him and his wife for their wicked deed. It was several years later when that judgment came on Ahab, and it too is a story of self-will. The incident started over a city east of the Jordan called Ramoth-Gilead, which Ahab said belonged to Israel, but was still in the hands of Syria. When Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, came to visit Ahab, he asked him if he would go to battle with him from Ramoth-Gilead. Jehoshaphat agreed, and so this wicked man met his death on the battlefield when a nearly impossible and perfect shot pierced the tiny space between his plates of armor, and he was killed in battle. So, you know, here we have a story of a man and a woman who are very self-willed, and she urged him on to be more self-willed and to just eventually indulging that self-will brought on his death in battle. And then the Lord brought these two incidents up with Jezebel and Ahab, and then Nabal, Abigail, and David was the next thing he brought up. Contrast this with Nabal, Abigail, and David. The balm from the virtuous woman can forestall disaster and reunited the alienated and estranged. Now, mind you, that whole incident with Ahab and Jezebel spawned a bunch of rulers that were just as wicked and evil as Jezebel was. So it really ruined a nation with Baal-worshipping rulers that brought the country down continually and left it in disorder. And this was all going back to this woman, Jezebel, who married Ahab and had a wicked tongue. Now, in the story of Nabal, Abigail, and David, this is what happened. A certain man in Maon, who had property there at Carmel, was very wealthy. He had 1,000 goats and 3,000 sheep, which he was shearing in Carmel. His name was Nabal, and his wife's name was Abigail. She was an intelligent and beautiful woman, but her husband was surly and mean in his dealings. While David was in the wilderness, he heard that Nabal was shearing sheep. So he sent 10 young men and said to them, "Go up to Nabal at Carmel and greet him in my name. Say to him, 'Long life to you, good health to you and your household, and good health to all that is yours.' Now I hear that it is sheep shearing time. When your shepherds were with us, we did not mistreat them, and the whole time they were at Carmel, nothing of theirs was missing. Ask your own servants, and they will tell you. Therefore be favorable toward my men, since we come at a festive time. Please give your servants and your son David whatever you can find for them." When David's men arrived, they gave Nabal this message in David's name, and then they waited. Nabal answered David's servants, "Who is this David, and who is this son of Jesse? Many servants are breaking away from their masters these days. Why should I take my bread and water and the meat I've slaughtered for my shearers and give it to men coming from who knows where?" David's men turned around and went back. When they arrived, they reported every word. David said to his men, "Each of you strap on your sword." So they did, and David strapped on his as well. About 400 men went up with David, while 200 stayed with the supplies. One of the servants told Abigail, Nabal's wife, "David sent messengers from the wilderness to give our master his greetings, but he hurled insults at them. Yet these men were very good to us. They did not mistreat us, and the whole time we were out in the field near them, nothing was missing. Night and day they were a wall around us the whole time We were herding our sheep. Now think it over and see what you can do, because disaster is hanging over our master and his whole household. He is such a wicked man that no one can talk to him." Abigail acted quickly. She took 200 loaves of bread, 2 skins of wine, 5 dressed sheep, 5 seahs of roasted grain, 100 cakes of raisins, and 200 cakes of pressed figs, and loaded them on donkeys. Then she told her servants, "Go on ahead, I'll follow you." But she did not tell her husband, Nabal. As she came riding her donkey into a mountain ravine, there were David and his men descending toward her, and she met them. David had just said, "It's been useless, all my watching over this fellow's property in the wilderness, so that nothing of his was missing. He has paid me back evil for good. May God deal with David, be it ever so severely, if by morning I leave alive one male of all who belong to him." When Abigail saw David, she quickly got off her donkey and bowed down before David, with her face to the ground. She fell at his feet and said, "Pardon your servant, my lord, and let me speak to you. Hear what your servant has to say. Please pay no attention, my lord, to that wicked man, Nabal. He is just like his name. His name means fool, and folly goes with him. As for me, your servant, I did not see the men my lord sent. And now, my lord, as surely as the Lord your God lives, and as you live, since the Lord has kept you from bloodshed and from avenging yourself with your own hands, may your enemies and all who are intent on harming my lord be like Nabal. And let this gift which your servant has brought to my lord be given to the men who follow you. Please forgive your servant's presumption. The Lord your God will certainly make a lasting dynasty for you, because you fight the Lord's battles, and no wrongdoing will be found in you as long as you live." So here she is, you know, saying all these wonderful things to him and trying to appease him, because she knows everyone's life hangs in the balance. She continued, "When the Lord has fulfilled for my Lord every good thing he promised concerning him and has appointed him ruler over Israel, my Lord will not have on his conscience the staggering burden of needless bloodshed or having avenged himself. And when the Lord your God has brought my Lord success, remember your servant." And David said to Abigail, "Praise be to the Lord, the God of Israel, who has sent you today to meet me. May you be blessed for your good judgment and for keeping me from bloodshed this day and from avenging myself with my own hands. Otherwise, as surely as the Lord, the God of Israel, lives, who has kept me from harming you, if you had not come quickly to meet me, not one male belonging to Nabal would have been left alive by daybreak." Wow, so she forestalled a major disaster by her good judgment. And the Lord has many times talked about bloodshed as being gossip, about ruining someone's reputation. Blood on innocent hands is one of the videos we did about that. She, with her good judgment, kept him from shedding blood. Then David accepted from her hand what she had brought him and said, "Go home in peace. I have heard your words and granted your request." So when Abigail went to Nabal, he was in the house holding a banquet like that of a king. He was in high spirits and very drunk, so she told him nothing at all until daybreak. Then in the morning, when Nabal was sober, his wife told him all these things, and his heart failed him, and he became like stone. About 10 days later, the Lord struck Nabal, and he died. When David heard that Nabal was dead, he said, "Praise be to the Lord who has upheld my cause against Nabal for treating me with contempt. He has kept his servant from doing wrong and has brought Nabal's wrongdoing down on his own head. Then David sent word to Abigail, asking her to become his wife. His servants went to Carmel and said to Abigail, David has sent us to take you to his home to become his wife. She bowed down with her face to the ground and said, I am your servant and am ready to serve you and wash the feet of my Lord's servants. She quickly got on a donkey and, attended by her 5 female servants, went with David's messengers and became his wife. So, what a difference between the blessings that this woman brought on and saved her whole household from demise by her good judgment and her goodwill, and rushing in between as an intercessor to bring peace, a true peacemaker. And you contrast that with wicked Jezebel, who was constantly fomenting trouble and was pushed to her death by her own servants and trampled under the hoofs of a horse, and her remains were left for the dogs to eat. What a contrast between the two stories and the two women and the effect that they had. The long-lasting effect of Jezebel on Israel was serious, really serious. I think here the Lord is showing us a contrast between someone who jumps on board with detraction and ugliness and someone who steps in the gap to bring peace and try to do the right thing and bring peace to both sides. And the fruits of that, Jezebel spawned generations of wicked rulers. Abigail saved her whole household and lived the life of a queen as a result of her wisdom in being a peacemaker. What a contrast. And I think we need to look at that every time we open our mouths. Who do we want to be like? Do we want to be like Jezebel, or do we want to be like Abigail? Because in the moment, you know, it's very tempting to jump on board with detraction and talk about it and make it big and juicy. But the result of that is serious damage and serious consequences for the people who do it, just as Jezebel was thrown out of her window by her own servants. And Abigail, as a result of her prudence and goodwill as a peacemaker, was made a queen and the greatest king that ever lived. The Lord continued. He said, I'm taking the time, my bride, to reveal the fruits of the wicked and the fruits of the wise. How beautiful you are to me, my bride. Truly, you take my breath away with your virtue when you defend the innocent and refuse to partake of evil. Remember, in this time left to you on earth, the devils are always looking for a way to defile you, to steal your purity, your innocence, your beauty, dissembling and destroying peace among brethren or family is the enemy's favorite tactic. Be on your guard, my beautiful one. Protect your virtue and the virtue of others from detraction and gossip. Keep your hands clean from the mire of this world. Do not allow anyone to soil your wedding garment, and continue to take my breath away by your virtue. Oh, how wonderful it will be on that day that I take you to myself in absolute purity, with nothing to shame you or cause you to blush. Remember, it's not what goes into your mouth that defiles, but what comes out that defiles and reveals the contents of your heart. Keep your heart only for me. Protect it without compromise. Bring peace out of strife. Let your virtue shine upon all men, that your Father in heaven may be glorified. Blessed are you, peacemakers. You are called children of God, and surely I will take you into the place I have prepared for you.